So thank you for having me here today. I'm happy to share with you some work that I've done. This is a study that was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and done in collaboration with my colleagues from Kaiser Permanente, University of Colorado, and UMDNJ in New Jersey. So, do I just roll it? Oh, okay, and no conflicts of interest to disclose. So, as you may know, quality improvement efforts have used different conceptual frameworks for trying to redesign the healthcare setting. The chronic care model is an example, one example of this, and it's a comprehensive framework, for those of you who don't know, of six major areas for quality improvement. One is the health system and organization of care. The second is self-management support for patients, delivery system design, decision support to enhance evidence-based care, clinical information systems, and linkages to community resources. So these six areas are conceptualized as fostering more productive interactions between patients and providers, which may ultimately result in improved patient outcomes. So most empirical work on this chronic care model obviously have focused on chronic disease management, but it can also be applied to primary and secondary prevention as well. Also, most studies have focused on provider delivery of care processes, for example, measurement of HEMA1C, but we also want to look at patient outcomes and health measures because they're important and arguably ultimate indicators of care quality. So the study aims here were to, number one, assess the implementation of the chronic care model adapted for prevention and behavior change in a national sample of primary care practices. And number two, assess relationships between model components and patient health status and health-related quality of life as outcomes or health measures, both unadjusted and then adjusting for patient covariates and clustering. So this study used data collected from round two of the Prescription for Health initiative, RWJ initiative. We used cross-sectional survey data from 57 practices and about 4,700 adult patients around the country. The dependent variables included three separate measures of health, so general health status, which was analyzed as a five-level ordinal outcome ranging from excellent to poor, and health-related quality of life was measured by the number of days that respondents felt they had physically or mentally unhealthy days in the past month. And because of its bimodal distribution, this was analyzed as a three-level ordinal outcome, 0 unhealthy days, 1 to 13, and 14 to 30 unhealthy days. And the last measure of quality of life was the number of activity-limiting days in the past month, so days in which respondents felt like they had they were unable to accomplish their usual activities like self-care, work, recreation, etc. The independent variables or predictors were different components of the chronic care model. So for example, the health system and organization of care component was operationalized as practice ownership by a hospital or university health system, and also practice report of performance information to payers and or health plans. Self-management support was characterized by the use of patient reminder cards and various supports for patients ready to engage in behavior change, specifically smoking, risky drinking, physical inactivity, and unhealthy diet. Delivery system design included physician specialty types, group or individual preventive visits, and practice champions to mobilize health promotion efforts. Decision support included practice integration of evidence-based guidelines to address various health risk behaviors, those four that I mentioned, and also clinician decision support in the form of PDAs, for example, referencing drug or treatment information. Clinical information systems included patient registries for addressing various health issues, as well as having an EMR in place. And the last component was assessed by whether practices had a system for linking patients to community programs for those four risk behaviors: smoking, drinking, physical inactivity, unhealthy diet. As for patient covariates, these included sociodemographics and risk factors like obesity, overweight, and smoking status. So in terms of analysis, first we looked at practice implementation of the chronic care model, and then unadjusted bivariate relationships between model components and each patient health measure, a hierarchical generalized linear modeling, or HGLM, approach to ordinal regression was used to basically account for the fact that patient data are nested in clinic data, which may cause correlated errors. So multi-level random intercept models were used to estimate the probability that patients would report higher levels of health, health status, and health-related quality of life. So this table describes practice characteristics and implementation of the chronic care model across the 57 practices. Over half belonged to a hospital or university health system. Almost half reported performance information to a health plan or other entity. Practices had some systematic support for patient behavior change and reminders. 28% had a multi-specialty physician staff. About half reported group or individual visits for preventive care. Over two-thirds, 68%, had health promotion practice champions. There was moderate use of PDAs and evidence-based guidelines for dealing with health risk behaviors. Over half had a patient registry to track chronic illnesses and risk behaviors, and had an EMR system with at least one of these listed functions here. And there was about above average linkage of patients to community programs. So these are the unadjusted bivariate relationships between each chronic care component listed vertically in the first column on the left, and general health status and health-related quality of life. It's a lot of numbers there. Don't look at all of them. The point is just to look at the test statistics there, the chi-squared and F-tests, that show you there were significant bivariate relationships between just about all of these. And the table continues, but again, the point is just to show you the unadjusted results before entering them into the multi-level models, which I'll show you now. So now, adjusting for clustering and patient covariates, I'm going to show you results from three different models, one for each patient health measure, the first one being this one, general health status. So we began modeling with all conceptually relevant variables that I showed you earlier, and then did a very careful backward iterative elimination approach to avoid overfitting the model, since we only had 60 practices, 57. So starting with the negative coefficients here, patients seen in hospital or university health systems and multi-specialty practices were more likely to have lower health status, as were those in practices that used group or individual planned visits and PDAs for decision support. In contrast, patients in practices that supported behavior change had health promotion champions and used patient registries reported better health status. And there wasn't enough space on this slide here, but patient correlates of better health included higher education and income, not being overweight, not being a smoker. In the second model, with fewer unhealthy days as the dependent variable, public reporting of performance, having health promotion champions, integrating evidence-based guidelines, using a patient registry, and EMR systems were all associated with patients having fewer unhealthy days, so better health. While use of patient reminder cards and group or individual plan visits were negatively associated with health. And in this last model, we see some similar results. Practices with health promotion champions, evidence-based guidelines, and registries saw patients with better health or fewer activity-limiting days, while planned visits, PDAs, EMR, and community resources were associated with patients having worse health. So you may have noticed across these models that many components appear over and over again with similar directional relationships, and we'll talk about that in a second. But first, just a few points. There was a moderate implementation of the chronic care model adapted for prevention and behavior change, though compared with a similar sample of practices in round one of this RWJ initiative, there was increased adoption of components, particularly clinical information systems. And this was over the course of about 3 years between rounds one and two. So clearly, there seems to be some movement in this particular area. There's greater investment in patient population, monitoring patient populations, and transitioning to electronic records in primary care practices across the country. We also found that three separate measures of health status and health-related quality of life performed similarly in relation to the chronic care model, specifically the patient registries, practice champions, evidence-based guidelines were routinely associated with better health across the models, while the group and individual plan visits were associated with worse health. And the fact that sicker patients may require more comprehensive care processes may be one possible reason for this last paradoxical relationship. And on one hand, it's good to know that more novel services like planned group visits are being used to address patient health needs. On the other hand, it does reflect the empirical challenge of establishing certain relationships between process and outcome, especially with just cross-sectional data. So just a quick summary. This study reports on the chronic care model adapted for prevention in primary care practices located nationwide and finds some significant associations between model components and different measures of patient health. We think that tailoring the model for prevention and behavior change may be important in meeting patient health needs anywhere along that spectrum from health promotion to disease management, and it's something that we'll continue to look at using longitudinal data.